John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Well, the mayor is not here just yet. He is on his way. I don't know if it's true or not, but maybe he got caught in the traffic up at the Alexander Hamilton Bridge. Anyway, he's on. I know that he is on his way. In fact, here they come right now. While we wait for them to get settled in here, the big story of this morning, of course, is the shooting out in Aurora, Colorado. And it's interesting to have been watching here this morning this story unfold, because it broke last night, which would have been midnight-ish Colorado time. That would have been 2 o'clock in the morning here. It was around 4 o'clock that we started to get info in here. And, of course, the speculation is that this crazy was trying to almost replicate the movie Batman itself. Now, there is no substantiation of that as of yet, but there are some indicators that maybe that was the case. Mayor Bloomberg, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Nice to see you, as always. That deal in Aurora, just another horrific, unexplainable mass murder.
You know, soothing words are nice, but maybe it's time that the two people who want to be president of the United States stand up and tell us what they're going to do about it. Because this is obviously a problem across the country, and everybody always says, isn't it tragic? And, you know, we look for, was the guy, as you said, maybe trying to recreate Batman. I mean, there's so many murders with guns every day. It's just got to stop. And instead of the two people, President Obama and Governor Romney, talking in broad things about they want to make the world a better place, okay, tell us how. And this is a real problem. No matter where you stand on the Second Amendment, no matter where you stand on guns, we have a right to hear from both of them concretely, not just in generalities, specifically. What are they going to do about guns? I can tell you what we do here in New York. The state legislature passed the toughest gun laws. Some states may say no. That's okay. What do you want to do? And maybe every governor should stand up. But in the end, it is really the leadership at a national level, which is who's ever going to be president of the United States starting next January 1st. What are they going to do about guns?
The reality is, you know, that will not happen.
Well, it'll happen, John. If it was one of your kids yesterday in Aurora, maybe you'd stand up and say, I'm not going to take this anymore. Maybe you get your friends and everything. And it's not a question of what you think is right here. Here's the issue. You want to be president? Okay. I said the other day, forget about stuff. What you want to fix the economy? Tell us how you're going to fix the economy, and tell us in a practical sense, because the president has to deal with Congress. The president has to do things consistent with what the courts will allow. But just going and talking in generalities, unfortunately, doesn't give the public the information they need to make an informed decision.
Don't you think that's true, again, because the public doesn't really know what it wants to hear, doesn't really care enough about that, and that the candidate has to play to the base because it's the only way he or she is going to get elected, and therefore, if he doesn't get elected, he can't do anything.
Well, it's like saying, you know, I can be dishonest because I won't get elected, and then I can't be honest. I mean, come on.
There's something more important
than getting elected, and that's standing up and saying what you think is right. And I mean, I listen to this all the time. Everything, oh, it's getting reelected. But getting reelected or elected isn't everything. How do you got to look your family in the eye. You got to look yourself in a mirror and say, this is what I really believe, and this is what I'll do if I get elected. And if it sells, it sells. And if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell. And, you know, you say people don't know. Yeah, I think that's fair. People don't have a solution, or everybody has a different solution. But that's why we elect governors and presidents and legislators to lead from the front, to come up with solutions, to tell us what those solutions they think are. Some will work, some won't. Some they'll get through the legislature, some they won't be able to. But you still, if we just say, well, there's nothing you can do about it, think about where we're going. This country is in very big trouble. And we need the two presidential candidates to tell us how they're going to take us out of this. We used to be here in New York in the top 10 in education in every standard. We're lucky to be in the top 50. We used to have all these new jobs created here in this country. Everybody talks about jobs. Tell us specifically how you're going to do it. Now, New York City, we have our plans, some good, some bad. Some people like them, some don't. But we're talking about the future of the country, tax policy. You know, they talk about, I'm going to reduce everybody's taxes, or I'm going to reduce taxes for the group that I think will vote for me the most. That's not the way to do it. But guns, get back to Aurora. This is killing people every day, and it's growing. And it's not just a inner city, East Coast, West Coast, big city phenomenon. This Aurora is not a big city.
No.
Suburb of Denver.
Yeah.
You know, the
25 miles from Columbine, which I think is
the
ironic.
Murder rate in the rural areas is just as bad, if not worse, than the murder rate in urban areas.
Have you ever talked with anybody about the psychology of that? I know the gun issue, but the psychology of that. Have we become less sensitive to our neighbor?
I don't know about that. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I can tell you that I don't think there's any other developed country in the world that has remotely the problem we have. There's no other place that allows. We have more guns than people in this country. It's every place else. If there are murders, they're generally not done with guns. Generally, a lot more are not done with guns. And everybody's got problems with crime, and you know that's the real world. God didn't make everybody perfect, but this is just, you know, and we can talk about it on the talk shows. We can wring our hands and say it's terrible, but I need more guns to protect myself. That strategy doesn't work.
Mayor,
that's like saying incarcerate more people and you'll reduce crime rate. In New York City, we've reduced the incarceration number of people incarcerated by over a third, and crime keeps coming down. Because when you send somebody to jail, particularly a kid, all they do is learn how to be a worse criminal. So that's just not a good solution. You may be able to say, I'll put them in jail and throw away the key. That sounds good, but it doesn't solve the problem.
You are talking about leadership, and we are desperate for it. Desperate for it.
We have two people on so many levels. Look, almost most of America believes that their candidate, whether it is President Obama or Governor Romney, will provide leadership. I think there's no question about it. They each have 40-odd%, whatever it is, 45% of the electorate. The whole election is going to be about that 10% in the middle.
If 10%.
Whatever it is.
Whatever the number.
And so, you know, most people say, well, if you elect my guy, there will be leadership. But maybe the middle is going to demand that you tell them how. And they're the ones that are going to decide this.
All right. Hang tight, Mr. Mayor. We got lots to do this morning between now and 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us here, 23 minutes after 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
I'm looking at the 4 after the 20, and I'm thinking about four steps ahead of myself.
A little bit dyslexic.
I do that
every once in a while. You're excited.
You know,
are we all a little bit dyslexic? Because I every once in a while. Not often.
Well, I think that your brain, you're three steps ahead of where your
mouth. Or lack thereof.
Where your mouth.
Or your mouth goes faster.
Absolutely. So,
right.
School scores this week. Charter schools a little bit higher than the rest. I know that there was some upticks.
Virtually every grade 3 through 8. Virtually every ethnic group. The only one that didn't improve was English language learners, as I remember, and that's for people who kids who English is not their first language, and that I think. Number one, a lot of them have gotten good enough to get out of it. They've learned English. My secretary, born in Washington Heights, Dominican parents, didn't speak any English. Melissa said she didn't speak a word of English when she was sent off to the first grade. And, you know, in school you just learn. And her English is better than mine. But her Spanish is a lot better than mine, too, which is really annoying.
But that doesn't take a lot, does it?
It does not take a lot. But all of the schools improved. The charter schools, there's a reason why parents want to send their kids to charter schools. They operate under a different set of rules, and the principal, the management of the schools, can change things and reassign things and adapt to their students' needs a lot better than what you can do under the existing contract between the city and the United Federation of Teachers. And the results show it. And so I think the numbers are something like this year there were 12,000 places and we had 45,000 applicants. And if other people thought they had a chance, you know, there's probably there'd be a lot more demand. If I think a lot of parents that don't understand the difference, and if they did, they would be out there demanding their kids go to...
Back to what you said about leadership in Aurora and the like, and the fact that in education in New York City, we're lucky to be 50th on a list on an international level. The charter school experiment proves that there is a better way to do this.
In
they
New
don't
York
all,
City,
they don't all work.
Not everyone works, and in parts of the country, they don't work at all. There's some parts of the country where the standards of who and what you can do with a charter are very different. And unless you have high standards and really vet those who want to start and run charter schools and then hold their feet to the fire, and if they don't work, close them, which we do here too. We do here. Then they don't necessarily work. But in New York City, we clearly show if you run them the right way, yes. Letting the principal allocate resources, set a curriculum,
the leader of that institution
and customize it for the students that happen to be there.
Right.
That's the way any good. I mean, it's
a business.
There is no organization in the world, private, public, government, academic, no organization that works without good leadership. And the better the leadership, the better the results are. And you have to run these things for the students, not for the employees. You have big investments in the employees, and you want to have the best employees, and you want to pay them as well as you can and give them the training that, and the management all and the tools, all that sort of stuff. Certainly nothing wrong with that. And in fact, it doesn't work unless you do that. But you just have to have the flexibility to do that. The city contract does not allow that. And you can see the difficulties. You know, the union keeps protecting people who shouldn't be in the classroom. They touch, have sex, whatever the case may be. This stuff is just, and it's embarrassing to the other teachers. They just, you know, you hear it from so many young teachers. I just don't understand, and I don't have any power. It's in the organization, but we've got to start focusing on that, working on evaluations. You've got to have real evaluations with real teeth. And some of these things, well, we'll evaluate, and the results will be used 2 years from now. It's unconscionable to wait 2 years and let all these kids have another year in school without a good education because they never catch up.
The city is required to have an evaluative process with the teachers by January. What's your confidence level?
Or you don't get...
$200 and some million.
Well, you know, we'd love to have the money, but the money isn't as important as having the best teachers in front of the
kids.
What's
your confidence level on this?
I have no idea. We'll see. I mean, I'm always optimistic, but you cannot have a system that delays the results and delays the implementation of... You know, having numbers is fine. You got to do something with them. Delays using those way down the road. And I just am not going to... We're in front of a court now. There was this arbitrator... it's inconceivable to me how the guy can sleep with himself. What he did to
the
30,000 kids, 24 schools, and just this is part of the contract. You know, the union contract that's been there. When some things work, it's some parts of the contract. Oh yes, fine. When it helps one side, but when it helps the city and the kids, oh no, that doesn't work. Hopefully this judge is a good judge, and hopefully she will...
Because one judge has already upheld the arbitrator, right?
No, I don't think so. I think the argument that the arbitrator doesn't have the right to decide this is now before the first judge.
Okay, all right.
I believe that's the case.
All right, but back to the scores really fast here. The scores were up, as been pointed out by you in the paper.
Yep.
But the scores themselves are disappointing. I mean, the fact that you have 60% of some kids who can't do grade work.
Part of the answer, John, is, though, what do you define as grade work? We have asked that they keep raising standards. Next year, they're going to raise the definition of where you should be. That if you have 10 and you go to 15, that's a 50% increase. If we define 8 as an acceptable level, okay? If we make 20 an acceptable level of next year, you're nowhere near your 20, but you've still improved
50%. Is that what was done this time, this year?
The standards, that was particularly last year. When they raised the cutoff point, the score is fascinating. Scores go up, but they raise the cutoff point. Everybody says, oh, look, a lot fewer people meet the cutoff point.
That I understand.
I mean, the kids are working as hard as they can. The teachers, we have a great teachers, they're working as hard as they can. The parents are working as hard as they can. And then a handful of people who've never done anything in their lives probably and have never been happy with anything, they keep going and saying, oh, you see. We need more money. Money is not the answer to everything here. We need the standards, and we need to hold people to standards.
State of New York.
And then we have to appreciate those people who work as hard as they can, and some don't mature or improve or whatever as fast as you'd like or as fast as others, or they improve or mature in different ways. And this, the bottom line is we have minority kids who have not scored as well as the whites and Asians. Okay, but they are improving dramatically. We haven't gotten them to where we want to be. Of course we haven't, and we're going to have to keep working at that. But we want everybody to improve. The turnaround schools, some of these, I don't know what the right term is, but we've created these new schools. Yes, they aren't up to where the other good schools are, but they're a lot better than if we didn't do something. And remember, a teacher who in one of these schools has a group of kids who didn't get a good education for the last 2 or 3 years, that's why we close the school, all of a sudden, what do you expect she or he to do? But if they're improving, that's going in the right direction.
On the dollars, the state of New York spends twice as much money on education per student than any other state in the country. It's amazing.
That is true. And the results are not that much better. We are in New York City the poster child for what you do with a big city school system. But we, for all of the improvements, the requirements of the world, of industry, for education to get a good job, keep going up faster than even we're improving, and the rest of the country isn't improving at all, or anywhere near as much. And also, the competition from around the world. The public schools, or the equivalent of public schools throughout this world, are getting better and better, and America is falling behind further and further. And in a world where it's so global that everything's in competition, to say, well, I don't care about that, just my town. No, your kid's job potential in your town depends on what happens on the other side of the globe. And our immigration policies make this even worse. The one part of American education that is still a standout, that is so far away from everybody else, it gives us enormous pride, and it's a big part of our economy, is higher education. And yet we're giving PhDs to people and then don't let them stay here. So they go overseas and they have to get a job. They go to work for another university over there. Those universities are starting to get better and better, and we're going to lose this. You see, in California, they just destroyed the whole public college system. It was the best in the world. And they've just defunded it, and it's falling apart. And the president goes, and he criticized a lot of these universities who keep investing, and they have big endowments, and they build a lot of buildings, and they hire a lot of great faculty. Yes, that's what that's all about, and you have to do that. And if you don't, you're going to lose the battle long term.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, lots more to go here. And again, I encourage you, Mr. Mayor, what's with the City Bike program? I asked you about it last week.
Software doesn't work yet, and we're not going to put it in until it does, period.
How long does it take to install the actual physical stuff?
Not a big deal.
No?
Not a big deal at all, because it gets solar power, so they don't have to do wiring.
Almost self-contained, bolted to the ground.
It's well designed. And these things work in lots of cities around the world, so we know that. The one thing is, the company that does it had some software problems, changed one of their software vendors, and until they get it right, we're just not going to install it. What's fascinating is a lot of the people who screamed, I don't want more bicycles, now they're screaming, where are they? Where are they? But traffic deaths, pedestrian and in cars, however you phrase it, continue to go down. Lowest in history since we started keeping numbers back in 1916 or some number like that, something like that.
What's the explanation, any?
Better traffic control, mm-hmm. where you look where accidents are and what happens if people are crossing the middle of a block. You try to stop that, or at a street corner you may have these gates, that fences to keep them on the striped paths, or different signaling, better enforcement. You know, we used to talk about the Boulevard of Death, Queens Boulevard. Nobody's used that term in a long time. Now, there's still every once in a while an accident. It's tragic. but not the kind of thing. And that comes from Department of Transportation and Jeanette Sedekon and all her people, and before her, Iris Weinshaw, looking to, you got to look, you know, everybody says, let's get some data. We want CompStat when it comes to crime. CompStat's great, but all it is a collection of data. Now you got to use the data in making decisions, and that's where everybody, one of the reasons crime doesn't come down in a lot of places is they don't use the data. They just think that if they have it, that's the end of it. That's just the beginning, and that isn't the tough part. The tough part is actually making decisions, because no matter what decision you make, some people like it, some don't. We have a new area where we cut a ribbon a couple weeks ago. A slow zone where you put some speed bumps on in a neighborhood where people are, and you have schools and that sort of thing, and all the people crossing. And some people, oh, you're slowing us down, or oh, the government shouldn't be doing this, or, you know, there's all sorts of things. But on balance, you know, there's a reason why life expectancy in New York City is 3 years greater than the country as a whole, or 2.7, whatever the number is, roughly three. It's because of lower traffic deaths, lower deaths by fire. We used to have these conversations. Oh, you know, the response time. Response time for ambulances and firefighters can be measured easily, and most importantly, in one number, deaths by fire. And the number of people who die, who would have survived if they got to the hospital a little quicker. Response times for ambulances and fire trucks and engines are as good as it's ever been, getting better. Now, you'd love to have a firehouse every place or an ambulance every place. That's not the real world. Nobody can afford that. But it just keeps getting better. And the people who work in the fire department and for the ambulance part of it as well, they've done a great job.
Interesting that, and I think a pretty good idea, at least clever, if nothing else, Wi-Fi-ing the phone booths around the city. I thought that was a clever idea. Yeah. Do you foresee the day when Wi-Fi is available anywhere are in
John,
New York?
I think 10 years ago it didn't exist. 20 years ago, you didn't have phones that you carried around. Today, my kids, I don't think either one has phone lines in
their
house.
No, my kids don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, this is an outrage. We don't have Wi-Fi every place. I mean, every place. Yeah, you don't. Or it isn't fast enough. I've only had 10 trillion gigabytes a day. You know, come on. At the rate it's improving and spending, it's right now. Yes, I mean, if you look, I was looking at some numbers recently. In the continent of Africa, which a lot of people think is very rural, and there's a handful of big cities like Johannesburg and Cape Town, and, you know, 50% of the people on the continent have a phone.
Cell phone.
No wires. And see, you've jumped start. Before, to do that in Africa would have been so expensive because you have to run wires. No, today it's one tower takes care of an enormous area. And who knows what the technology will be in another 2 years or 5 years. But the direction it's going is everybody will have very good communications all the time at very low price. Now, somebody's got to pay for it. And number two, the effect of this is something that is not clear. There are arguments that people are spending so much time doing this, it's hurting their mental processes of thinking.
Human communication.
You'll have plenty of PhD theses written about it, but there are impacts. There's impacts on government. How do you govern when there's an instant referendum on everything?
We've talked about it on this program.
Before you get a chance to build a constituency, or before you get a chance to do a pilot and try it.
You're being twittered to death.
Yes, and most, not all, but many elected officials just can't stand the pressure. They say, oh, I've got thousands and thousands of emails complaining. Well, number one, if you counted them, it's probably 20. Number two, they were all identical. It was one form letter that some put your name in it, punch here, and it automatically goes to them. You know, and it's just you got to put those things in perspective.
Yeah,
the impact of better communications isn't necessarily all good. In classroom, I've talked about this ad nauseum, but you say that, oh, my, Johnny can write. Look how wonderful the technology is. Johnny writes this phenomenal report, and it's got video and links and all this sort of stuff. Johnny didn't understand anything about what he's doing. In the olden days, you went to a library, you talked to a librarian.
Right, he just dragged it from someplace else.
The presentation stuff, that's not learning how to learn how to use computers. Learning how to drag and click is not learning computers. Anybody can learn that. And whatever you'd use today, you can rest assured it will not be what you're using 2 years from now.
See, I just think this complicates your problem now and whoever is mayor in the future, because, as you say, it doesn't make the ultimate learning experience happen. It's just another tool.
There's some evidence that all the technology in schools is not helping at all.
It's a pencil. It's all it is a pencil.
I mean, you get down, I saw in, I think it was the Times today, had an op-ed piece about distance learning, if you will. And I think the guy was on the faculty of UVA, and they had all of this craziness. They fired the president, and now she's back.
And they're just going onto this Corsage or Coursera.
Right. So, I mean, who knows?
Program.
But... Do you ever go on Khan Academy?
No, I've
not. Free courses, and it's fascinating. Now, the guy in the op-ed piece today said, well, you know, this is no better than reading a book. But I would argue that for a lot of kids, if they just sat down and really read the book and read it two or three times and did the exercise at the end of each chapter, they probably learn more than if they sat in the classroom with a professor in front of them. And then there are professors who are brilliant, who win Nobel Prizes. And then there are those who never win a Nobel Prize but can connect with the students and explain and teach them and get them to think. There's no easy answers to any of this. And technology is useful. But you saw at Stuyvesant, that disgraceful cheating incident, one of the reasons we don't want cell phones in the classroom. Somebody wrote a nasty column about pornography. Pornography is a very big problem because if the student downloads pornography and shows it to others, the city can easily be liable for not managing the classroom and preventing that from happening. The teacher's up at the front of the room. She or he's trying to teach. They can't be at every place in the classroom and looking. And kids will be kids. Come on. You know, in the olden days, teenagers read Playboy. Today, I don't know, Playboy, I guess, still exists, but everything is neither way. It's all on the internet. It's on your cable system. You have hardcore porno on your cable system.
Could you jam the classroom so that the phone would be inoperative?
Yes, you can do that in some places. You can do that. Then, of course, there's a civil liberties issue, and then there's what happens if there's an I love the one, the World Trade Center attack showed why every kid has to have a cell phone. Truth of the matter is, the school system did perform phenomenally well on September 11th, 2001. And what they did is they kept all the kids after class. They didn't let them go home. They waited. They acted so intelligently, and no kid was killed or hurt or whatever. Now, some of the parents said, well, I was worried. I didn't know. Most important thing is not that you don't know. The most important thing is that your child is safe. And, you know, that's not an argument to have it.
I want to ask you before we have to take a break and then back to the phones and the questions. McCarran Pool, what is going on there is just outrageous. And I haven't heard anybody really, you know, kind of get up in arms over it.
Well, some of the press today was, you know, where are the people, the local leaders and elected officials yelling and screaming.
The behavior is just...
Well, number one, you got to remember that teenagers misbehave, and there's some events at all pools, so let's not just rush. McCarran Pool is a big new pool. The city spent $50 million. We had a big meeting, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, I believe it was, police and Parks Department to make sure that we're doing everything we can. Part of it is just once it becomes fashionable, then the kids rush to do it. We will not tolerate this. We're just not going to tolerate it. Do we want to close a pool? Of course not. Kids need a place to go. And most kids, let's not forget, most kids don't misbehave. Most kids follow the rules. Most parents don't let the kids defecate in the pool. But it's a big world out there.
Just terrible.
And we're going to keep working on it.
And complicated. And as you say, you're not going to close the pool down. All right, Mr. Mayor, we're going to go to the phones here in just a minute. Let's go to the telephones here. Grab your headset. We'll start with line number one. This is Rich in Staten Island. Hello, Rich.
Hello, John. Hello, Mr. Mayor. Thank
you.
I want to thank you for your stop and frisk program that you continue to push forward. Last night on a local radio, on a local television station, I'm going to mention the station. I have to, and maybe the mayor will use it as reference. It was on WPIX. They cited that out of all the stop and frisk, over 200,000, 90% were innocent. Yet they didn't focus on the most important thing, that 10% had guns.
Well, it would be wonderful if the results of our stop and frisk showed that 0% had guns. Rich, I agree with you that we should focus on the fact that it is getting guns off the streets, but it's getting guns off the streets partially because we find them. It's also getting guns off the streets because the kids who might be carrying them know they're likely to get stopped, and so they don't carry them. And it's like the fire department. Fire department's job, I've always thought, the most important part of what they do is all of their inspection and education programs. It would be wonderful if you never had a fire. Now, you know, some of the firefighters would say, wait a second, that's my job.
Puts me out of work.
But it doesn't put them out of work because they know, I mean, and they take great pride in their inspection and education things. And because of the building codes being better and materials being better and these programs to get smoke detectors and CO2 detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, not CO2. All those things have reduced fire deaths, and the murder rate keeps going down because of things like getting guns off the street. But stop and frisk is not the only thing we do. I said before we were talking about incarceration. We have, as we brought down the murder rate dramatically, we today incarcerate one-third fewer people than we did 10 years ago. Why? The conventional wisdom around the country is throw them in jail. If you throw somebody in jail, particularly a young kid, we don't correct. They learn what to do to be a worse criminal. And if they don't go to jail, but in fact are of home detention or a probation program or community service, or some people say, oh, well, that's not really penalizing. That may not be, but penalizing may make you feel better, but it doesn't make you any safer. What would make you safer is if a kid that falls off the straight and narrow gets the kind of help, whatever he can do, that will keep him from falling off the straight and narrow. Now, people say, oh, you're a bleeding heart liberal. This is not being a bleeding heart liberal. I don't think anybody would accuse Kelly or me of doing that. It is a practical answer to some people are very dangerous, should not be on the streets, throw them in jail. Some people can get some help, and those are the ones you want to make sure you do. And if you do that, that will solve the problem. So stop and frisk is a terribly important part of what we do. And we've got to make sure we do it legally and correctly and with as much compassion and discipline and courtesy as the real world will allow. Let's get serious. You know, it's just the real world is not all what you'd like it to be necessarily. And not everybody's as polite as you'd like them to be. And the people feel threatened and you have to make split second decisions. But the bottom line, stop and frisk is an important part of it. We're committed. You know, 3 weeks ago, we had July 4th, and that 1 week, it was terrible the previous year, it was terrible the year before, it was terrible this year. But then last week went right back to the lowest rate we've had in the history of the city. And let's hope that continues.
All right. Thanks a lot. Let's move along here to Steve. Steve, you got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Mr. Gambling. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I also applaud you on the stop and frisk.
Thank you.
Now, I'll quickly get to my point. I'm a legal, responsible gun owner.
Great.
And a proud member of the NRA.
Okay.
This
I believe it or not, have been a member of the NRA. Somebody sent me a gift. True story.
As a membership?
As a membership, yeah. It expired, and whoever sent it didn't bother to renew it.
Steve, what's your question?
I've also been on the cover of the NRA magazine, something you haven't either.
I don't think it was positive, probably.
I highly recommend you renew your
okay.
Anyway, this tragedy that happened in Colorado, I'm afraid that it's going to be exploited by the media as blaming the tool and not the tool user. And I know that's a cliche, but it's true. A gun is no more dangerous than a hammer or a machete. The only difference is it can kill you long distance. If you're responsible and you've committed no crime.
Steve, we're running out of time. I don't disagree with you. It is not the gun that does the killing, or at least that's not the operative part. It is the person who has the gun. Having said that, The federal laws say you shouldn't be allowed to have a gun if you're a minor, a convicted felon, a drug addict, or psychiatric with psychiatric problems or whatever. And that's what I have argued we should be enforcing, the federal laws that are all already on the books. And yes, I don't know what happened in Aurora, Colorado. That's just one incident. There's 34 people a day killed with illegal guns. Let's get the guns out of the hands of those people who shouldn't have them and permit you under the Second Amendment. You have the right to have a gun as long as you're responsible and you comply with the law. And so I'm not trying to take your gun away at all. All I'm saying, and I don't know what happened out there in Colorado, whether the guy was legal or not. But anyways, and thanks for the call.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it. Take us right to the top of the hour. Catch up with you next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
Have a great weekend. It is nice.